WE Mobile.
Green Zero.
Hey, Tom, how are you, bud?
Doing okay. One thing I did.
Chet.
Oh, hi, Chet.
Bernice is over at the table. How's Perry?
He's just kind of in his mind a little bit, but I'm very encouraged, and he's up walking, he's welding, he's, you know, not really supposed to be, but he's doing, you know, he's doing good. We just trying to get, I don't know how to say it, some of that bad attitude, I guess. That's not the right word. We're work in progress. How about that?
Chad, that would work on your mind as much as, you know, PTSD or something, because he went through a traumatic event there, and he needs to be thanking the good Lord that he's not crippled for life. There at first, we were definitely worried about him, because I don't know how anyone survives getting their back broke in two places.
It was not a very good scene, Tom. It was, I really thought he was dead when I rolled up on the scene, and it was just, I don't know, but it's all good. We're, you know, time heals all, and I'm very thankful for where we are, and just take it day by day, and I'm okay with that.
Good, dude. It's not like mine. Somebody like that fire chief did me wrong. I think I'd find it hard to forget that when my son's laying there dying and they won't even give him a backboard.
It's all good. It's just a lot of mistakes made, and that's okay. It's all good. You try to find a place to accept, you know, your wrongdoings in the situation, and accept some forgiveness too, and it's all good. He's gonna be all right. I'm gonna give him another month or so, and then I'm gonna start being that dad again. You know what I mean?
Yes, Sergeant Major. I found out many years later, Connie Linder, she's a master electrician now up in Kansas and has her own business, and she's Amy's best friend, always has been, and she told me when she visited down here one time, she says, you know what your nickname was, don't you? And I said, well, the Master at Arms? And she said, no, the Warden.
Somebody's got to be it, you know, and if you are comfortable with it, right?
That's the truth, Chad. Years later, I was laying in a hospital bed, and my heart was down to 15% ejection fraction, and they didn't think I'd make it. She said, Dad, you did everything right. I don't believe she'd been truthful with her. I didn't do everything right, but I tried.
Humility is a powerful thing, and it lets you see, you know, just exactly, with some time, it lets you see kind of what's really happening, and you can be resilient to that and accept no change, or you can just see the truth and say, okay, well, maybe there's some things that can be, you know, unhardened here. And that's pretty difficult to go through, but it is very right, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
For a minute, I did everything right, but I tried, and I think the best thing you can give your children is to instill a good work ethic in them by leading by example, Chad.
Well, I kind of stepped in for a couple of weeks, administratively and in the shop, because he had quite a bit of material there, and if we couldn't get that out the door, probably lose the contract. And so it's been a rough, month or so, but we've contacted the company, and I don't know, to hear them talk about my son and just what good work he does and how they are just, and for, that company to come around and say, hey, we got him. We're going to reroute some things because we need to continue to function, but we got it. And you don't get that. You can't buy that. And you have to have an ethic to get that. Right?
Right. And I seen where you brought Perry from at the first until where he got to. And he was doing a fine job. Well, did you finally learn how to jig weld?
We had a shop party last Friday, two Fridays ago, to celebrate, we had some, cooked some hamburgers and got everybody there and took some time off to just enjoy each other's fellowship and company. We went and bought some yellow Pepsis and, had a good time. Well, one of the boys that worked for Perry, his dad's an old friend of mine. We went through high school and, gotten a whole bunch of mischief. Well, he came and we were just, reliving old times, that kind of thing. And I told my friend, I said, Perry had a bunch of parts laid out on the table over there. And he said, well, thin stainless, and the way he welds it, it's just, it looks like it's made into the part. So I just kind of winked at Danny, and Danny went over there and said, boy, he said, that looks really nice. That looks really nice. And then he turned around and looked at Perry, and he said, Perry, did your daddy do that? Tom, I wish you could have seen the expression on his face. It was just like, I guess you had to be there, but we just had a big kick out of that.
But I got to tell you, I seen miles of jig welding, all kinds of welding, Chad, when I was doing the maintenance for the machine shop and the structural shop. And I had one guy there that compared to Perry, and his name was Ron Dickey, and I still remember him to this day. And I went down there one day, and I had a sender out of a forklift for a gasoline sender, it goes in the tank with the float on it. And he's, I said, Ron, can you weld that? I said, it's awful thin. He said, Tom, if it ain't paper, I can weld it.
Well, had an acquaintance that we know in the family that works at a local transfer truck hub. And 2 days ago, he was underneath a trailer, working on a trailer, and somehow or another, the landing leg collapsed on the trailer and broke his back. He paralyzed, same age as Perry. And it took him about 2 hours to get the trailer off of him. And I don't know, man. I don't know what's just that's kind of put things into perspective for me and him a little bit, in that, you know, this could have been a lot worse, and it's bad, but that's okay. We're positive, and we're gonna take from it, and keep moving. But son, you got to keep moving. You can't just, and it don't necessarily at the moment need to be the right direction. Just move. And then, you know, we got me and Papa there. We'll get you moving in the right direction. Just move. And he's responded to that really well. We're really proud of him for that.
Is he on a gun? I guess so. Well, you do a good job of welding there. Bernice was wanting to know if you happen to have any spare store-bought hip sockets. She's needing a new one.
No, but we can work a deal between me and Chris. We can come up with something. Might not have, you know, full range of flexibility, but we can work something out.
Yeah, and they scheduled her clear out till January 27th. Can you imagine that, Chen? I was talking to John. RJN up, he lives up towards Raleigh, and he's a real nice fella, and I was talking to him on the repeater one night before the net started, and he's seen his doctor, and he's already got one scheduled for this month, and that's his second one. I guess they're extremely successful with the hips. The hips are a lot better than the knees as far as recovery goes, so we're optimistic about that. And they did all the heart tests on her, and so she's still eligible to get one because she's had stents put in before, and they had to check that out. But she's good to go, and so they could put her on a list. Of course, you don't know how long that list is, and they're not about to tell you, but they might get her in earlier.
Well, my mother had a knee replacement about 2 years ago, and she's, you know, getting around pretty good. Just tell Bernice that I went through therapy with Mom, you know, going through her knee replacement, and it's not easy, but we've come through that hard time, and, you know, we're two and a half years out of it, and it's worth it, but there are times when it doesn't feel like it is, but it is, and, you know, it is what it is. You've got to be able to get a handle on that, but now there's, you know, a lot of mobility where she can get around and move and do things, and that is important, very important.
This is KO4NUE.
Send your OTR. Well, you want to thank Chad for that?
Thanks, Chad.
You can't stop her, hard-headed German. She's still getting around pretty good, Chad, but she has a very high threshold of pain. I don't. I'm a wimp when it comes to pain, but I like to complain. She never complains, but you can tell it's hurting her. But, you know, she's 57 years old and dyslexic when it comes to those numbers, of course. But she's doing pretty good.
Well, I got Mom one of those, it's going to sound kind of hinky, but it's called a rubbing rock. It's kind of sort of what the Indians use, but it's a piece of basalt, I don't know, about 3 inches long. It's rounded on the edges. It's real smooth, a real smooth rock. And you can put it in the freezer or you can put it in some hot water. And when the stitches start to heal, you know, or the tissue is sore, we'd take that rock and usually warm it up, and she could, you know, rub around the stitches with it and be kind of pointed with it. There's a lot of benefit in that, you know, because that's something physically Mom could do to try to control some of the discomfort. Instead of just taking a pain pill, she could physically be involved in, okay, it hurts right there, let me rub, and, you know, that kind of thing. So I know it sounds kind of hinky and simple, but, you know, just keep that in mind. It's, they don't call it Indian tricks for nothing, right?
And Doc on Gunsmoke said that ice was the oldest anesthetic known to man. And if it's said on Gunsmoke, you know, it's got to be right.
Oh, absolutely. Let me tell you a little story. So we were in Iraq, me and a friend of mine, Alan. He was platoon sergeant, and I was first sergeant. And we, every Friday night, we'd get together with all the leadership, and we'd watch a TV show of your choice. We'd go into Basra or Mosul, and we'd buy some bootleg copies of, you know, Gilligan's Island or whatever. You know, you just tell them what you want, and they bootleg it for you. So Alan, every time it was Alan's turn to do a show, is Gunsmoke. And our favorite line was, you know, Festus would always say, you'd get in trouble, and Festus would say, you know, what we going to do now, Matthew? So every time we'd get in a predicament, you know, some kind of bad situation, he'd be in one bunker and I'd be in another, and I'd hear him holler out, what we going to do now, Matthew? And we just, we still cackle about that. So you're right. Festus is, Gunsmoke's got a lot of truth in it.
I was talking about that the other night. It's always, I think it was Patrick. It always ends well, and you don't see all this blood and guts stuff like you do now. And there was a lot of kindness in it too, and definitely a moral outcome. And I don't care if I see them 10 times. We watch them every day on MeTV at 1 o'clock. On channel 4-2, and I still enjoy it, and there's a lot of good in it. These shows nowadays, I guess it just shows our age, but so much stupidity and silliness, and everything that they do ends up in a crazy dance. It's just not our cup of tea, but we love Gunsmoke. I had all those tapes, and I threw them out. I should have given them to you, but I was just getting to know you, and I didn't know you liked them. And well, they was DVDs, and one of them, or it was VCR. There's the big ones. I think there was some Chinese knockoff come out of the Bahamas or someplace down there. I ordered them on eBay, but about 90% of them were good. Some of them were a little conflaborated. But we always enjoyed them. It's one of the good shows. Kind of like Andy Griffin.
Yeah, well, I got a series of I Love Lucy and Andy Griffin. MASH is my favorite. I mean, my favorite. I love to watch MASH, and I'll pull those DVDs out from time to time. That, John Wayne, anything with John Wayne in it, I'm good to go.
Run those a lot on there on 21.5, on Grit TV, and 4.2. Well, Chad, I was sitting at the International French Horn Convention. It was called the International Horn Convention. I was a member of it because I played in an orchestra up in Kansas for 9 years just to help them out. And one day I was sitting there in a horn choir which is just a bunch of French horns, and some guy was directing us, or gal, I don't know which. And I looked behind my bell, the bell's always faced backwards, and I seen a guy sitting back there about 10 feet behind me. And I tapped the girl on the shoulder next to me. Now, some of them knew this, but I didn't. And I said, that looks like that pompous British ass that was on MASH. And she turned around and looked at me, and she says, that is that pompous British ass that was on MASH. David Ogden Stiers, and he was sitting behind me. I could feel myself kind of shaking from then on, Chad. But he didn't want to be approached or ask about that. But he loved French horns.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in those older movies, you know. Back then, it was, you know, you need to know how to act. You didn't need, you know, all these graphic effects and all this violence and everything that is, I don't know, sometimes I feel like it's just, I mean, we're all psychopaths, believe it or not. It just takes the right situation for it to come out, you know. And we certainly don't need a whole bunch of bad stuff to make that easy to happen, you know, so. Back in the day, Ronald Reagan acting and John Wayne. I mean, that's real acting, though. You know, you didn't need all that stuff to get involved and to see, you know, some moral fiber there. And I think that's what's changed with today's movies is that there's just not a lot of moral fiber there. And you got to be careful what you subject your mind to. So you stick with True Grit. That's a good one to stick with.
Channel, and it's good, and True Grit is too. Yeah, there's still some good shows on those. Zangrain Theater, 20 Mule Team Borax. Bray still uses that, don't you? Borax and the Wash. And Tombstone Territory, Wider. They can say what they want, but like you said, they had to know how to act back then.
Well, I think my favorite line with John Wayne is, "Feel your hands, you son of a gun. I'm coming for you, and Hades coming with me." And I get all excited every time I hear him say that.
Ronald Reagan. I like a lot of World War II stuff, too. It's enjoyable. There's another channel, Chad, 4-4. It's a story television. And I was telling Patrick, I think it was Patrick. No, it was Shane. We were talking, and was talking about natural gas, utilities and different things. And I said, yeah, they used to give the school system down there in Texas all of their natural gas free because they were just burning it off, and so they actually piped it over to this one school that was near the refinery. Well, back then they didn't put any smell in it, and it got away from them there. Well, I guess, you know, they didn't have 100% pilots and all that with thermocouples, I guess. And killed 300 children in that school. And then after that, they started putting the stinkum in the natural gas. And I didn't know that. And you hear things on that story channel that's just incredible.
For NUE. Well, I tell you, I ran over the couple years ago, I ran over the propane tank we've got buried in the backyard. Clipped the control valve going in the top of the tank with the bucket. And, oh man, it was quite a catastrophe. And had to call the gas company out to stop it, you know. I had the Bobcat parked over it, was afraid to move the Bobcat. I mean, it was a mess. But anyway, the gas guy came out, and, I mean, it was putrid smelling. You know how propane, they put that smell in there. But one thing I noticed was the flies. My gosh, the flies that were attracted by that smell. And I was talking to the gas guy about it, and he said, well, that's one of the reasons they put the smell in there is, you know, you want all the indicators you can get to show that there's a, you know, some type of leak or something, and flies love it. And so, I never thought about it that way. You know, the smell's bad enough, but when you start seeing visual indicators too, that's pretty doggone smart. I don't know who thought of that, but it's a pretty good idea.
Sure. Yeah, Chad, I used to have to service a 30,000-gallon propane tank and mixing station. And up in Kansas in the 80s, our plant was like 300,000 square feet, and they would shut the gas off to you if you used over your allotted amount. So the superintendent called up and told me to go over and put us on propane. Well, I couldn't put us entirely on propane. I had to put it through a carburation system, and it mixed an air-gas ratio equivalent to the heating nature of or characteristics of natural gas. So I didn't have to go around and over. I probably had 100 heaters I'd had to change the orifices in them. So I made it at the same heat level, and I cut down the natural gas flow. I let it still use some, but not like we were using. And, you know, we had things like 13 million BTU stress ovens and stuff like that. And one day I went out there, and there's three propane generators, and they look like an enclosure, and then they had two scuba tanks, I called them, in each one of them, and they could generate. They call them propane generators, and they could vaporize 70 gallons an hour off of that 30,000-gallon tank. So we had three sets of them, and that was 210 gallons an hour, because you're just taking the vapor off the top. Well, there was a pop-off valve stuck on one of them. And when I walked out there, Chet, on the other side of the foundry, the propane was about 4 feet high off of the ground. I don't know if you noticed that or not. It's kind of like chlorine. It goes down. It's heavier than air. And, but of course, coming out the top of a valve like that is 250 pounds per square inch. And it'll burn you like fire if you get into it. So I walked out through that, hoping nobody'd come by and flip a cigarette out, because the street was right next to it. And I went out there with a crescent wrench, because our superintendent would not buy me beryllium wrenches, which are required to work on it. They're non-sparking. Tapped on that pop-off valve till it quit and tried to hold my breath and get back out of that field full of, I mean, it was a field full of propane gas. Made you a little bit on the nervous side.
And I can suspect that was pretty unnerving. But, you know, anyway, I'm headed up to Pickens. I'm going to go check on old man, see how he's doing, so if I can round him up and visit with him for a little bit, and figured I'd jump up here and see what's going on.
Up there and visit with him, and we got him fixed up with a weather station here last year. He really enjoys that. And got I love old Chris, and so is Bernice. She took him a German chocolate cake last year, and he liked that. So tell him we'll get back up there. We just haven't been around in a little while, and she's kind of crippled up. But tell him hi. I talk to him every now and then before the net at night, between 8:30 and 9. You'll come on a little early sometimes, and always enjoy that, Chad.
Well, he give him a steak and potato or a piece of pie?
He's going to take the pie every time.
That. I've already had two of Bernice's oatmeal cookies this morning. Last night, a piece of her carrot cake. She's over here looking at recipes now, trying to make me fat, and I keep losing weight. Jan, I'll let you go. Like I said, tell Chris we're thinking about him. Maybe I'll catch him on tonight. Have a safe trip up there. I get lost every time I go up there, coming back. Going up, don't have no trouble, but coming back, somehow I get turned around. I guess that's, we're a little slow. We're from Kansas, you know. But we've been here 15 years. We should know better. Say hi to Anna and Perry and all of them, and your dad, and we'll catch you down the line. Great to hear you this morning. KO4NUE and 0TR 73.
73, Tom. Just remember, when you get lost, just click your heels and say, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. 73, Tom. It's KO4NUE mobile.
You got that wrong. We left Toto and Dorothy back up in Kansas. But I guess you're right about no place like home. And we left the tornadoes up there, hopefully. See you later in 0TR.
ULG, KO4NUE. ULG, KO4NUE. No contact, I'm clear.